This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you've been on social media or taken in the national news in any way the past couple of weeks, we're guessing you're probably aware of the harrowing clashes taking place in Portland, Oregon, between protesters and police. In recent weeks, these violent scenes have involved federal agents, personnel from the U.S. Marshals Service, but also from the Border Patrol and other arms of the Department of Homeland Security. President Trump sent them to Oregon to deal with what he called the city's inability to stop the nightly Black Lives Matter protests. There's been a lot of tear gas, peaceful protesters shot with less lethal ammunition, and some very unusual tactics for arrest. Now the president says he's preparing to send more troops to other cities, and Detroit was on his list. Steve Vladek is a professor at the University of Texas School of Law and also co-hosts the National Security Law Podcast. We wanted to talk to him about precedents governing these cases. Steve Vladek, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April. Great to be with you.
You know, not to get too Portland-centric, but the situation out there is so unusual. The state's attorney general tried to sue the Trump administration to stop some of the practices that federal officers were using, and a federal judge actually found that the state did not have standing in this matter of whether federal officers should be on the ground. Did that surprise you at all?
Not really, April. I mean, I think the Supreme Court in recent years has been pretty resistant to the idea that states can sue the federal government whenever their citizens are harmed. And also, I mean, unlike some other contexts, I think it's not hard here to find some individual people who actually really would have standing. I mean, so there was a new lawsuit filed yesterday on behalf of a group called Don't Shoot Portland that I think is a much cleaner case from the perspective of representing individual protesters and a few folks who even allege that they were wrongfully arrested. So, you know, it's not, I think, the norm or the best idea to have states being the lead litigants in this context. I think it makes a lot more sense to do what this new lawsuit is doing, which is have the individuals who are most directly harmed be the ones bringing the claims.
So this new lawsuit filed yesterday, again, is the activist taking their shot. There are three advocacy groups represented and five individual protesters. And they're accusing the Department of Homeland Security of violating protesters' right to freedom of speech, freedom from unreasonable seizures, and they also mentioned due process. Why do you think this suit will be significant?
Well, I think it's not just those constitutional claims which are really important, but I also think there's a pretty compelling argument made in the case that the DHS officers who have been deployed in Portland are actually being deployed beyond their legal authority. So this is a claim under the Administrative Procedure Act that basically the CBP officers on the ground, the Federal Protective Service officers on the ground, of course they have the authority to arrest for federal offenses. But that doesn't give them the general authority to do shows of force, to do this kind of counter-protest maneuvering that we've seen. And so I think, you know, it's very possible this lawsuit is not only going to resolve some of the factual disputes over exactly what's happened, but also, you know, very possibly cabin the federal government's authority to, you know, to sort of closer to the exact letter of the statutes that they're operating under.
The lawsuit filed yesterday also questions whether the acting Homeland Security chief within the administration, Chad Wolf, is acting legally. He has not, as of this time, been confirmed by the Senate. Do you have any thoughts on whether that's a powerful method of questioning what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it's a very important part of the story, not just that there's no Senate-confirmed Secretary of Homeland Security, and there hasn't been since April of 2019, which is the longest vacancy in the history of the U.S. cabinet, but that none of the senior positions at DHS are filled by Senate-confirmed officials. The challenge to Chad Wolf especially, I think, is a little bit weaker than, for example, the challenge to whether Ken Cuccinelli can really call himself the acting deputy secretary. But the larger point, I think, is a really important part of the story, which is that here we have officials who have not had to run the gauntlet of Senate confirmation, who don't have, you know, any stakeholders to whom they're beholden besides the president. And I think that's a big part of how we got here. And frankly, I mean, I think we have to be clear. It's a big part of why the president has prioritized using the Department of Homeland Security resources in a context in which we might have historically expected the Department of Justice.
There are discussions that can be had about what has or has not been done to or on federal property in Portland, Oregon. But I wanted to ask you a bit about the president's promises of future deployments and how this might play out, say, in Detroit. The administration has had two stated reasons for sending troops into cities: protests, but also suggesting that there needs to be a crackdown on gun violence. Can the federal government do that, just step in it as a policing agent?
I mean, the short answer is not really. The federal government, of course, has the power to enforce federal law. And, you know, federal criminal law is a pretty impressively broad compendium of prohibitions, but it's not universal. I mean, so the federal government can't just come in because there's a violent crime that local authorities, say in Detroit, haven't done enough to investigate. There actually has to be a clear federal constitutional interest. So, you know, drug crimes tend to be a pretty good hook for the federal government. Some kinds of especially large-scale violent crimes, if they're related to interstate gangs, you know, that gets the federal government's authority, I think, on board. But the notion that the federal government can just go into a city where there's violent crime as such and clean up the violent crime as such is actually a notion the Supreme Court has specifically rejected as recently as 2000 in a case called United States versus Morrison.
I noticed that six American mayors, all of them Democrats, we should say, including Chicago's Mayor Lori Lightfoot, are asking Congress right now to pass a bill that would require consent before sending in federal officers. I mean, first of all, given the case you just cited, is that really needed?
So I don't think it's needed. And also, I mean, April, I'm not sure it's a great idea. I mean, we have examples throughout American history of the federal government going into cities and states that didn't want them to enforce federal laws that I think we're all a lot more comfortable with. President Eisenhower sent the army into Little Rock to enforce school desegregation orders. President Kennedy did the same in Mississippi and Alabama. So I'm not sure we want to create a world where local and state authorities can basically just sort of veto federal enforcement of federal law. I think the far better solution here is for us to paint a much clearer picture on where the line is between what the federal government's allowed to enforce and what really is the primary, if not exclusive, responsibility of local and state authorities.
Mm-hmm. So what does the Constitution say about states and their right to exclude federal officers if they see fit? I mean, it feels like this was sort of a big issue in the eyes of the founders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, federalism is, of course, one of our most enduring constitutional principles. But one of the key things about federalism is that where the federal government is acting within its lawful sphere, and of course, that's the big fight in Portland, states aren't allowed to exclude them because federal authority has to be supreme where it's valid. And so that's why I think, you know, a lot of the conversations about Portland and about future deployments are missing, I think, a big part of the puzzle, which is, the question is not, should the federal government ever be able to do this? The question is the federal government acting within its statutory and constitutional authority today? And I think that's a big part of why this new lawsuit is such a big deal, because the center of that lawsuit is trying to define the outer boundaries of the statutory power that the Department of Homeland Security has to engage in these kinds of law enforcement missions.
Well, as you pointed out, there certainly have been times like with school desegregation where the federal government has been within its constitutional rights to do that. Can you take us a little bit further into how the courts have made that definition in the past?
Sure. I mean, I think the short version is that the central question is simply whether the federal government has the valid authority to do what it's doing. And if it does, then the state or local government that's objecting is just out of luck. Then its only remedies are the political remedies of trying to change the leadership of the federal government. And so the question is not who has a better policy between, say, Detroit or Michigan and the federal government. The question is simply, is the federal government doing something it's allowed to do? If it is, then that's the end of the matter so far as courts are concerned. And that's why I think the real question in Portland is, you know, how far beyond just protecting federal property have these federal agents, these CBP officers, gone?
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, my guest is Steve Vladek. He's professor at the University of Texas School of Law and has been thinking and talking about national security law in the context of protests in the streets on the West Coast. Part of what has informed this case law is a piece of congressional law called the Insurrection Act. Can you explain what it is and sort of why it's become an important concept in these cases?
Sure. I mean, so the Insurrection Act is actually a terrible name for a series of five statutes that date back all the way to 1792. And these are the statutes that allow for the president to use the military when things have really gotten out of hand on the ground, when local and or state governments are either unwilling or unable to enforce federal law. And so the idea is that in truly extreme circumstances, the proper way to restore order is to go through the military. First, to go through, say, the state National Guard. And if the governor won't call out the state guard, then to federalize the guard or even call in the army. This is clearly an authority the president has, but you know, there's a reason why we've gone 28 years since any president last used it, when President George H.W. Bush used it during the Rodney King riots in L.A. It's very unpopular. It's not an authority that the federal government likes to exercise, especially when states haven't asked for it. And so I think that sort of puts this all into context that, you know, going back throughout history, if there really was sustained, prolonged unrest or disorder in American cities, you know, it was the military that we used to restore order. It was the military that was trained to do that. It's the National Guard that's used to doing riot control. And one of the really alarming things about what's going on in Portland is that by moving away from the trained, disciplined, politically constrained military to the Department of Homeland Security, which has no real history of serving this mission, you know, it suggests that the real goal is not actually restoring order, but that the real goal is the optics, and is, you know, the political points of being able to say, look, you know, we're restoring order our way. It's all the Democrats' fault. I think that's really a dangerous precedent to set by turning this into a partisan issue as opposed to a, you know, everyone's on the same page and getting things working again kind of issue.
Well, I know you're not, I know you're a law professor, not a specialist in police tactics, but what differences do you see playing out when we have people trained to do border patrols doing this kind of urban crowd control?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that seems to be happening based on the videos we're seeing out of Portland is a lot more confrontation than you're necessarily going to expect when you have, say, the National Guard establishing a cordon and imposing a curfew. I think we've seen arrests that are clearly inconsistent with the governing constitutional standard, where individuals are being arrested without probable cause, perhaps because the Border Patrol, you know, in its primary function is used to arresting individuals for whom that's not an issue, because they're arresting folks who have just surreptitiously crossed the border. So, you know, I think this goes back to the larger problem, which is that when, you know, the Trump administration says we have every right to be there, we're protecting federal property, we're enforcing federal law, that's true in the abstract. The question is, how much is that actually what's happening on the ground? And how much is what we're seeing actually much more than that, in ways that may not only be beyond the statutory authority of the federal government, but that may be violating individuals' Fourth Amendment rights?
Does this feel to you like a different standard and a different precedent? I mean, is something happening here that has not happened before?
I do think there are some factual idiosyncrasies to what's going on in Portland. Putting the Department of Homeland Security on the front line is not something we've seen before in this context. This kind of, I think, aggressive federal provocation of protesters is not something we've seen, certainly at least in, you know, 50 years since the late 1960s. But, you know, I think the broader point is the question of whether this is just individual officers who are acting out of line or part of a broader federal policy, I think is to some degree informed by statements senior officials are making. So there was this one statement by, I think it was the deputy director of the Federal Protective Service, who described one of the arrests that was captured on video and tried to defend what the officer was doing in a way that completely misdescribed what the Fourth Amendment requires. And so if that's what, you know, the senior officials are saying, if that's how they're understanding the constitutional questions, then I think it's little wonder that some of the line officers might also be crossing the line. That's where this lawsuit comes into play. That's where I think the courts are going to have a lot to sort out in the coming days and weeks.
Well, Steve, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think that more federal officers will be deployed in some of the other cities the president has mentioned before the courts have their say?
I mean, I do think that we're going to see more federal deployments across the country over the next couple of months. But, you know, just because there are more federal officers, say, on the ground in a city like Chicago or Detroit, doesn't mean we're going to see what's happening in Portland. I mean, I think the difference between Portland and everywhere else is in Portland, you have federal law enforcement officers going out into the streets and purporting to serve as the general riot police. I'd be very surprised if we see a lot more of that in other American cities, especially because I think that's the part of this that's going to cause the most heartache for the courts and potentially the most pushback against what the administration is doing.
Yeah. You know, the past 3 years have in many ways been a festival of experimentation and constitutional law professors, as the administration has, you know, tried some things that haven't really been a traditional part of presidential policy. Given some of the other conversations that have happened in terms of presidential privilege, how much of a departure is this compared with other constitutional conversations that have been playing out over the past 3 years?
So I think it's actually deeply consistent with some of the same problems we've seen in other contexts, where what's effectively happening is the administration is taking existing authorities and using them in ways that just haven't been used before and in ways that perhaps they ought not to be used. And so, you know, in some respects, what's happening in Portland, what might be happening soon in other cities, is more of the same, which is an administration that is not bound by conventional political constraints, and that is perfectly happy taking every legal authority it has to its breaking point, if not beyond.
You alluded to the fact that there may be elements of political theater in the deployment of the kind of federal troops that we're seeing in the streets on the West Coast. What is your read on how much of this is actually playing out for an, as someone said, an audience of one, meaning the president?
Oh, I think that's a big part of this. I mean, I think a big part of this is, you know, getting rave reviews from the audience of one, but also, you know, these videos from Portland and these images from Portland are showing up pretty quickly in campaign ads. And so I think it's been a conscious move on the part of the administration to make this part of their message, that, you know, what's going on in Portland is what people should expect if they vote for Joe Biden, whereas what's, you know, the pushback, the law enforcement response, the tamping down of what's happening is what you can expect from President Trump. You know, that's a message that resonated a lot in 1968 when it was Nixon running against President Lyndon Baines Johnson. But Nixon wasn't the incumbent. It's a bit odd for a president to, you know, be putting out images of unrest and saying, this is what you can expect if I lose, when he's the president now and it's under his watch.
Is there anything else that you think people should keep in mind as they consider the possibility of a federal deployment in Detroit, maybe how it is and isn't different from what's played out in Portland?
Well, I just, you know, I think the key is just the focus should always be, what are the federal officers doing? If all they're doing is enforcing federal law, if they're, you know, assisting local authorities with local requests, if they're, you know, looking into violations of federal statutes, then, you know, we might not agree with the prioritization of resources, but that's perfectly kosher, at least legally. Where things really, I think, have run awry in Portland is that I think there's increasingly little question that the federal government has gone past its statutory and constitutional mission. And that's the line that's, it's hard to draw, but it's critical to draw. And it's the one that we ought to be looking for if we see deployments like that in additional cities like Detroit.
Professor Steve Vladeck is at the University of Texas School of Law, and you may have heard him on the National Security Law Podcast. Steve Vladeck, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.